This is a KSHSAA production.
First down from the 17 is where they mark it officially. Here's Hancock, breaks back at the 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Jayden Hancock.
One block down to the other end, misses. Shot won't go up the gun, and Eudora comes from way behind and goes crazy.
Welcome to another edition of the KSHSAA podcast. I am Jeremy Holliday. This is our first podcast of the school season as school is back in session as the fall sports seasons are underway and girls golf and girls tennis programs will have their first competition day this Friday as I talk here August 21st. I hope you did catch a couple episodes over the summer of the Jackie Stiles induction to the NFHS Hall of Fame podcast. I encourage you to go back and listen to that if you did not. A great opportunity to get to know Jackie Stiles and the event that took place this summer in New Orleans. As the fall seasons are getting underway here this week, we had the first live contact day for those football programs out there. And with that being said, you may have noticed some practice limitations that football programs have to follow starting this year, and so we wanted to talk about those with Brent Unruh, our kind of our sports medicine guru here in the office and also our office manager, about the rationales and the science behind why those practice limitations are put in place to minimize the risk for those kids playing football. And also sticking with the football theme on this podcast, we're going to talk with John Betts of Kansas Pregame Magazine to get his preview of this year's edition of the magazine, the 10th edition for those guys working on that magazine. We'll get his input on some teams to watch out for this year and looking forward to what features to look for in the state of Kansas as you go out on Friday night to watch those kids play. So stay tuned for a great episode of the KSHSAA podcast.
My name is Paige Pearson, and I am a student at Osage City High School. To me, sportsmanship is one of the most important aspects of a high school activity. Sportsmanship shows strength of character, maturity, and school spirit. Officials, players, and opposing teams appreciate good sportsmanship, and it makes games so much more fun. So have good sportsmanship at high school activities so that everyone can have fun and enjoy the game. This has been a public service announcement from the Kansas State High School Activities Association and the Student Advisory Team.
Okay, we're going to talk about the game of football here and how it's changed in the state of Kansas this year in regards to contact limitations. If you've been paying attention, the coaches and schools and the NFHS has put in a lot of information towards contact in regards to football to minimize the risk. And to talk about how that came about and why we put these limitations for football in, we're going to bring in Brent Unruh, our kind of resident athletic trainer, to give us explanations as to why this is reasonable and the rationales for doing it. And Brent, to get started, just explain how this process came about as far as starting at the NFHS and then kind of trickling down to the state association level to implement for the football teams.
Yeah, it really started at the national level with the National Federation. They put together a task force of different medical personnel, state association personnel, and people like that to kind of get together just to decide what would be the best kind of plan moving forward in terms of limiting contact, especially in practice, just to try to limit some of the concussion exposure that kids are facing. So they developed a task force that met back in the summer of 2014 and came out with some general recommendations for state associations to look at in terms of limiting contact in practice. And that's really kind of where our guidelines stem from that we've implemented here in Kansas.
What would you say, people that might be reading this information of what kids have to follow now and coaches, someone that says, well, how come we didn't know about this sooner? Or is this something new to football? Is concussions new to football? Or is it it's just because more data is out there now?
Yeah, I mean, concussions obviously aren't new to football. It's something that's been around the game for a long time. Probably the biggest change is that in the last probably 10 to 15 years, the medical community has learned a lot more. Understanding, you know, have a little better understanding of some of the long-term effects of concussions and things like that. And by limiting some of the repeated head impacts, you know, we're just hoping to give that brain a little more time to rest, a little more time to heal, and hopefully reduce some of the incidences of concussion and also some problems that people may be having down the road.
I think when we got this committee together here in our office, the sports medicine committee, and also the football coaches that came in to look at the plan. One big thing for us was to get on the same page as far as defining contact. And USA Football has put together their levels of contact with air, bags, control, thud, and live action. And that's kind of how we put together the practice limitations, by defining those and telling them what they can do during the days of the week, and specifically week one guidelines. Brent, if we look at the week one guidelines, we start with helmets only, then helmets and shoulder pads. It's kind of a progression, and also tell them when they can use air, when they can use bags. But what's the rationale for defining all of that?
Well, the rationale is basically just for a gradual kind of acclimatization into the game. We don't want to start out with kids just banging heads right away at day one or day two. We need to give their bodies time to kind of adapt to just some of the simple demands of the sport, make sure they stay somewhat fresh so that when they do put the pads on and have more intense contact, you know, they're able to do it just with better conditioning, with a little better energy, and they're not already in a fatigued state. It's when you get the kids in a fatigued state and you're doing a lot of contact is where you tend to see a lot of the concussions take place. So we're just trying to keep them a little fresher and just a little more of a gradual gradual progression into contact.
And as we see that, they'll do that through, as we go with standard calendar weeks, number 7, and they'll do that through week 9. And starting week 10 of this standard calendar week, that's kind of when games are starting, and we define the full contact. How many minutes can I have to have live action with my football team and or thud combined? Is 90 minutes per week. So 90 minutes, is it nominal? What's that number coming from?
Well, you know, there's no magic number out there. When the National Task Force met last summer, they just felt that, you know, once you get into a football season, that, you know, anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes a week of full contact in throughout the week, not including games, is probably enough for any kid to go through. I think as we met with our coaches and with our football focus group and our sports med committee, I think it became apparent that, you know, most schools are probably not doing much more than that anyway right now, or even before these guidelines went into place. So, 90 minutes is a long time to be going, with full speed, full contact throughout the course of a practice week. You know, I think a lot of coaches spend a lot more time, you know, teaching, doing fundamental work, and just doing a lot of walkthrough stuff to get schemes installed and things like that. So coaches understand they need to keep their kids fresh and healthy for the games, and that's usually their goal too. So, you know, the 90 minutes I don't think is going to be too big of an issue for anyone to meet.
It was interesting. We had a number of different styles of coaches, like you mentioned, whether it be pass heavy or run heavy coaches that came in, and they all said, we're pretty much doing this 90 minutes. If we're not, then we're pretty close. So you're right. It should be fairly accommodating for them to meet those standards. And then the other two things that are in this contact limitation for the state of Kansas here is, if you participate in a game the next day in practice, you can only do is airbags, controller thud. No live action is recommended for those players that just played in a football game. This was kind of a big deal for Kansas because we have kids that play freshman football on Thursday, or they play JV the next day. So it was something that was closely looked at in our meetings, and just explain why that's important and something to pay attention to.
Yeah, this was probably one of the bigger issues that will force some coaches to kind of change the way they do things, and some schools to change the way they do things. The issue here is that throughout the course of a game, you know, there are so many head impacts taking place. And, you know, we're not saying that those impacts are all leading to concussions. Hopefully they're not. Hopefully very few, if any, of them are. But when you get repeated sub-maximal impacts like that, you know, there is still some wear and tear that's taking place in the brain, and some inflammation that can take place. And so what we're trying to do is ensure that the next day that child has a chance for their head to kind of just rest and recover, whether or not they sustained a concussion or not. You know, the other concern always are concussions that go unreported. And for, you know, as much as we are doing to educate and to make people aware and coaches being aware of concussions, you know, there's still going to be cases where kids just don't report a concussion. And so, you know, by limiting what they can do the next day, at the very least, at least we're ensuring they're going to have a little bit of extra rest before they start, you know, amping it back up again. So it's really just kind of a safety for those kids to make sure they're getting some extra rest for their brain before they, you know, move on throughout the week.
And kind of a closing thought and philosophy is, you know, no matter if you play sports or everyday life, there's always going to be risk of injury. The point of all of this and the sports medicine committees, whether it be with us or NFHS, is that they are there to minimize risk, and that's what's important with these type of plans.
Yeah, that's a great point. Risk is present in sports. There's no way around it. When you still compare it to other things we do in our daily lives, it's a lot lower risk than a lot of other things we're doing. So, but yeah, we're always looking for ways to minimize risk without changing the game and without, you know, creating risk somewhere else. So that's our goal.
If you'd like to read the actual language and word for word of what the practice limitations are for those programs, go to our website, kshsaa.org, and then go to the football page, and you can find that there.
On behalf of Kansas State High School Athletics and Activities Association, this is Rachel Chalupa from Blue Valley Northwest High School asking you to be different. Becoming a leader takes time, but the first step is to differentiate yourself and stand up in courage for what you believe. Whether in the bleachers, in the classroom, on the field, or in the hallways, continue to lead with respect and courage.
The 10th edition of the Kansas Pregame Magazine is now on the shelves, and we bring in John Betts, the publisher of that magazine, and also the Lincoln Sentinel Times and Chapman News. John, thanks for taking time of your day to talk about this magazine that you've put together for this fall football season.
Yeah, well, I really appreciate it. I have a passion for high school football that was generated from growing up in Smith Center and having the good fortune of getting to play for Coach Roger Barter there, and then I've coached at three different high schools in Kansas, at Waukini, Russell, and Lincoln over the years, and I've owned the Lincoln Sentinel newspaper for the last 15 years. I was a manager of it for 3 years, and then owned it for the last 12 years, and then owned the Chapman News Times for the last 10 years, and so I've been able to kind of pair my passion for high school football in Kansas with my understanding of publishing and create this statewide preview product that we're pretty proud of, and we're, you know, we're proud to say that we're 10 years old in it. Time flies. I can't believe that this is our 10th annual edition, but we got it out on the shelf, and I think it looks really good. 144 pages with coverage for nearly every high school team in the state. There's a few that towards the end there you have to start making decisions about whether you have any information for anybody or not, and there's a few teams that we didn't get hardly anything in for this year, but at least 300 high schools in the state of Kansas have pretty significant previews, and we're pretty proud of that.
And obviously there's a lot of contributors to go into a magazine like this. I'm just looking at some writers here. It looks like you got, you know, 10 or 11 or even more than that throughout the state of newspaper columnists that contribute articles for this. So that's got to be time-consuming, and a lot of organization goes into tracking down those articles from those people to get put together.
Well, it's really become a year-long process, and as soon as – we get done with 1 year, we're starting to look ahead to the features that we're going to use for the next year. And we've been fortunate to have relationships with especially Kansas newspapers over the year, but also radio and TV personalities. Those entities have been willing to allow them to moonlight for us, if you will. And Brent Maycock and Connor Nickel and Eagle Radio's Dustin Armbrister recently, and in the past, Harold Bouchard, who's been the editor of Vipe for the last few years prior to working for Vipe, and his work at the Hutch News and the Salina Journal, he's done some writing for us. And I, you know, I start to list these guys. Over the years, you know, we're talking about 30, maybe 40 different writers, not to mention photographers, graphic designers, and school secretaries and athletic directors and high school coaches and people that help us sell advertising and advertising sponsors. You know, Pizza Hut and Subway are probably our most significant sponsors that we've had long-term relationships with, but we added Surefire Ag this year, and we've had the Kansas Association of Independent Insurance Agents, and if it wasn't for advertising, that's how our product's distributed free through through hundreds of advertisers, and we've been fortunate to develop a really great relationship with kpreps.com over the last 5 years. You can go to kpreps.com and you can click on the magazine page and you can see the magazines that we produce, because we also do a basketball and a wrestling preview. And you can click on a link and see the digital edition, or you can click on a link and find all the free distribution locations where you can pick it up. And if it, you know, I mean, there's dozens of people that contribute to this. My company is a small organization, so, you know, in terms of full-time employees, we only have 3 or 4, but our part-time contributors are just numerous. And we're really proud of the fact that, you know, journalism is not an industry where anyone's probably going to get rich as a writer or reporter. It's the kind of career that you do because you're passionate about telling people stories. And so we're proud of the fact that we provide a supplementary income for some of those guys, that they can do a little extra work and make a little bit of extra money off writing capsules and features for us, and then help us produce this product that I think everybody's really grown to expect, that kind of kicks off the football season.
Well, I think you're right, and I look forward every year. And I picked mine up at the Pizza here in Topeka, and I walked in there and I said, I need a copy of the pregame, and the guy looked at me like, man, you're too late. He said, we've been out for days. And I'm like, oh no, you know. So, but then he looked down, he goes, I found one more copy. So I got the last copy at the Wanamaker Pizza Hut. So anybody in Topeka, I'm sorry. But maybe you can ship some more there. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Pizza Hut has been, from the start, which when we started 10 years ago, it was a 80-page, partially color, partially black and white newsprint product that was stitched and trimmed, which is just stapled along the back in a kind of a tabloid format. And it was, I always tell people that I'm really embarrassed of that first one, because it was the layout was the ads and the content were all mixed, and it was hard to kind of follow where stories went and stuff. But when we started it, I just knew the whole time. I laid the whole thing out myself on a 13-inch MacBook using the trackpad, which was the dumbest thing that I've ever done in my life.
Wow.
But I learned tremendously valuable lessons about the process, and the whole time. And I mean, I worked long days, many, many long days. And the whole time I thought, I just have to get this out. If I get one of these out, people will see it and they'll get excited, and it'll grow and it'll grow and it'll grow, and it has. And I think it was year 4 that we really probably were fully statewide. And then 6 years ago was the first time that we had a, 5 years ago was the first time that we had our special cover shoot, where we invite kids from, you know, some of the top kids from all over the state and do that kind of thing. And then we started adding different features and grown. I think people enjoy it.
Well, and one thing that I found interesting in this issue this year was, I think it was last week, it kind of hit Twitter about, you know, Jordy Nelson goes back and works on the farm in the off season, cause he's just a farm kid. And one of the segments or cover stories or whatever you want to call it, pieces in this year's magazine, is called Down on the Farm, and you feature kids that are actively involved on the farm after practice, before practice, in the off season. It's just a strong staple of the culture in Kansas and for Kansas high schools that develops a young person. And I thought that was pretty interesting. And you have things like that, Down on the Farm and the Dynamic Duos and the Iron Will, the three pieces there. What made you kind of come up with the Down on the Farm segment? And if we wanted to feature a kid, to give an example what that is, the Jason Zook kid, lineman from Chapman, how'd that all come about?
When we first started doing the magazine, one of the things that I would do is seek out action photos from a lot of different teams. And we actually, I had a couple of photographers that used to work for me, and we would go to a lot of different games, and I still go to a lot of games. And I actually, we would go to warm-ups of one game, the first half of another game, and the second half of another game. So we'd go to get photos from three games that were in a relatively close proximity on any given Friday night, and we'd do that a lot. But I was having such a hard time, and then I would reach out to yearbooks, staffs and journalism teachers and different local newspapers and say, hey, would you be willing to share a photo? You know, we'll be sure to give you credit and that kind of thing. But I was having a hard time. I mean, it's very difficult to get a good action shot for 330 different high schools in the state of Kansas. So I think it was 3 years ago. I mean, we started expanding features right away, 3 years ago, we said there's no way we're going to get a picture for every school. So let's focus on doing more features and bring kids into a centralized location and find some quality professional photographers and feature these kids. And so we've had the Iron Will, the weight room feature we've done for 3 years now. And then the cover feature was kind of how we started those centralized photo shoots. And then we did at Sharp Performance, where former Salina Central and KU standout Jake Sharp has his facility there in Salina. A couple of years ago, we did a recruiting event where we actually talked to kids about the process of recruiting and being a college player. And we brought some kids in, and then we did some feature photo shoots with them and featured them in different articles throughout the publication. But this year, I'm not sure what it is that made me think, hey, we've got to focus on agriculture. I guess actually this is the second time that we've done an agricultural-based feature. We did one 4 or 5 years ago where actually Cody Whitehair from Abilene was one of our featured athletes, and there's a picture of him in his Cowboys jersey standing on the steps of a tractor, kind of hanging out from a tractor, and there was three or four other kids that we focused on. And so I'd always kind of known that I wanted to do some ag features because ag is the most important industry in the state of Kansas. I mean, while our society has changed to where more people live in cities than they do on farms, and even in Kansas, you know, the population of Johnson County and the Kansas City metro and Topeka and Lawrence and Wichita has grown so much over the last several years, we still are an ag-based economy. I mean, even in the city, most of those, you know, a lot of those jobs are contributed to by our ag-based economy. And so I was looking for a way to say agriculture is tremendously important, and also, and especially in rural Kansas, which when you look at our state, honestly, 90% of it is rural. Friday night football is one of the few things that can get tractors and combines during fall harvest and whatever else, you know, and guys out of fields and out of the cabs of tractors and into stands to watch kids play Friday night high school football. I mean, it's the gathering point. It's the focal point for so many rural communities in Kansas, and it's just a really special event. So we said, let's find some of these kids that are growing up on farms, that are farm boys, that, and in one case, like Alex Deese from Great Bend, he's actually doesn't live on a farm, but he lives in town. He works on a farm, and that's been an important part of where he's learned those lessons, is that he's developing character and learned that commitment that you got to be someplace on time, and you might have to get up early, and you might have to work late, and those kind of things. And Jason Zook is a kid that, and a lot of these kids are, I mean, Luke Shim and Nathan Stein, the Ursa kid from Ingalls, these guys are super talented athletes that easily could have been on the cover of the magazine, that are amongst the fastest, most athletic players in the state of Kansas. But some of these other kids are really tremendous players that don't maybe get as much notoriety, you know, maybe because they don't, in the Ursa kid case, he runs a sub-1100. You know, the Stein kid has led a Spearville team to a couple of great seasons and has an opportunity to lead them to a state championship this fall. But like Jason Zook from Chapman, great wrestler, amongst the best heavyweight wrestlers in the Midwest in high school. I mean, has beaten kids from Colorado and Missouri. And, you know, he suffered an injury that during football season that he thought was going to damage his wrestling season, and he missed part of it, but he was able to come back, rebound, win a state championship. And now this tremendous size that he has, 6'4", 6'5", 275 pounds, I think the guy's got a potential to be a D1 offensive or defensive tackle. I mean, let alone the fact that he can probably wrestle at maybe the highest level out there. And the first step with any of these features is really to get a recommendation from a coach. I mean, we follow football all year, so stats and all league honors and other publications that we trust, like the Topeka Capital Journal and the Wichita Eagle and K-Preps with their all-state team, we see those things and we see who's coming back and we keep an eye on them. But I always reach out to all the coaches in the spring and I say, tell me about your kids that are good. Who are some of your best players coming back? And then it's also important for to hear that these are kids that they can count on, that they're going to be in the weight room, they're going to be at practice, they're going to be a leader, and those kind of things. And we really want to showcase those kids. It's not just about the fact that they're a 3- or 4-star pick on Rivals and they've got 35 Division I offers, although our cover includes a lot of those types of kids, and that is an important part of those features. But we also want to make sure that we reward those kids that are high character kids, that their coaches say we can count on this kid, that he also happens to be, he has worked so hard and he is a really outstanding football player. And Jason Zook is one of those kids.
And definitely, you're exactly right. There's a number of kids in here that deserve so much attention, and you did a good job featuring what's important about them and why they're in here and what they do for not just the team and the community, but the football team, all of that aspects. And one of those things is, and if we kind of shift to maybe some previews for the football season, but also you look at the Dynamic Duo section of the magazine and you look at the Central Plains duo. Last year you would have said Braden Kreitz and to Beaverly. How many times did we hear Kreitz to Beaverly for a touchdown? Well, Beaverly's gone this year, but they got the kid Jacob Workin stepping in there in the 8-man class. Central Plains, you're looking for them to pretty much step back and be a contender again this year.
Well, I think that what you're talking about is the question that will need to be answered is, what do they do without Lane Beaverly? Because I will tell you that in coaching, playing, or covering high school football over the last 25 years, I don't know if there was a better wide receiver in the state of Kansas at any level than Lane Beaverly. That kid, his route running, his ability to catch the ball, and there's that picture in there from for the K-Preps photo contest of him laid out in the state championship and catching that pass. And also, what a tremendous defensive player that he was in the defensive backfield. He is a huge question mark for them. Braden Kreitz is an outstanding quarterback and another player that probably could play at any level and excel. And he went to some off-season camps that were kind of some elite camps, because I think he would like to have that opportunity to play college football, and he performed really well and really turned some heads. Jacob Workin is a great linebacker for them. That's the Kreitz-Workin dynamic duo there. But they have a number of other pieces. Cody Price is going to be a 4-year starter for them at linebacker and on the offensive line, and he has been one of the tackle leaders over the last few years. And I know that they have a couple other pieces along the defensive line that they're going to look to because their defense was maybe what won them a championship last year, made a key stop in a very tough game with Spearville and stopped a Hanover offense that featured a group of guys that ended up running one of the 5 fastest 4x1s in the entire state all classes last year, and tremendous athleticism and size from that Hanover team. So I just think they have to answer that question of, is are they going to be able to deal with Lane not being there as a safety outlet, somebody that they could always throw the ball to, that they could count on for the deep ball. I still think they're going to be very good and be a contender to repeat. But somebody's going to have to step up and take on that role that Lane carried so well for them over the last several seasons.
Well, it will be interesting to see how they fill that role on the football field, but also obviously in so many other, the basketball and so on and so forth that he was involved in for Central Plains this year. As we move on up the classifications here, one thing I wanted to talk about was 2-1A with you is last year in the state championship game, we saw Opie and Elsaline, maybe two teams that maybe weren't expected to be there, but that's the case. And in high school football, you just never know. But looking through the projections this year, we look at two familiar teams that are looking to get back, and that's Meade and Phillipsburg.
Yeah, and Phillipsburg, they really had a heartbreaking semifinal loss. They were stopped inside the 5-yard line twice, once right before half and once at the end of the game as basically time expired, and ended up losing to Elsaline 22-21. And I think that they outgained Elsaline in that game something like 400 plus offensive yards to Elsaline had, I believe, less than 200. And that was Phillipsburg has been a tremendously talented team for many, many years, that has sometimes had a hard time getting over the hump in those playoff games. And they they lost a big piece in Stuart Linneman. They lost a big piece along the offensive and defensive line in the Jacobs kid, but they really returned pretty much everything else. Nate Pruitt and Brock Means were a couple kids that were featured in our weight room feature. Those are great players for him. Nate actually got hurt in an off-season combine, and it'll take him probably until midway through the season to get completely recovered with that knee. But once he comes back, I think though he'll probably be coming back right at the right time that they can make a run within districts. And they have a four-headed quarterback race to replace the Sage kid that was quarterback for them last year. And they actually had a kid transfer in from Nebraska that they think can be really good. And then Keith Sides, the basketball coach there, who was a great athlete at Northern Valley, his son is a freshman, I think, or a youngster freshman or sophomore that's going to potentially challenge for the quarterback role. And all of those kids are going to get on the field somewhere. They're huge up front again, even with the loss of Jacobs, which he's got a little brother that's coming up that's going to be along the offensive line for him. I think that they have the potential to be really good, really talented. Meade is going to be really experienced this year, where they were they only had a couple starters coming back last year. They're going to be very experienced, and obviously they've been really good under Coach Mosier. And Cash Larrabee, which has got to be one of my favorite names of any high school football player anywhere, he was one of our down on the farm features, and he's a kid that is a true farmer and rancher. He knows how to ride a horse, and he knows how to use it to work a herd of cattle and cut out cows and do those kind of things. And he is potentially a Division I football player, a 6'2", 220-pound linebacker that led the team in tackles, I think, the last couple of seasons. And together with him as a leader and all that experience, you're going to expect them to make a deep playoff run in 2-1A this year.
Well, it'll be interesting there to see how they respond from that loss at Phillipsburg there to El Saline there in the sub-state championship. But if we move on to Class 4A, I'd like you to talk about maybe a competition battle that we're going to see for the defending state championships at the quarterback position for Bishop Miege.
Yeah, Bishop Miege. Ryan Willis was their quarterback last year, one of the best in the state, now part of the University of Kansas football team. And he's a big, tall guy, you know, in the 6'3", 6'4", range. And they're going to have to replace that. And he threw for like 3,000 yards or something last year. What the guys that are battling are Landry Weber, who happens to be Stan Weber, the K-State color commentator son, and a young man named Carter Putz. Now, I'm really sorry if I pronounced that wrong because I haven't got the pronunciation on that. But both of these kids are 6 foot or shorter. And they were really a pocket passing, kind of a drop back team last year. And they run it out of the spread. And they're going to have three or four wide, most of the time. And one back in the backfield, Dawson Downing. That back, Dawson Downing is one of the best running backs in the state of Kansas. And he ran a 3.98 pro agility at a combine somewhere in the offseason, and that is just outstanding. I mean, that's an NFL caliber number. Anytime you get down around 4.2 or 4.1 in a pro agility drill, you're talking about you're amongst the elite in the country in terms of speed. So if you're breaking the 4 mark, you're really outstanding, and he's a great running back that's going to be a guy that's going to get a lot of D1 looks by the time it's all over. So he's going to help this alleviate the pressure of this quarterback race, but it's going to be interesting to see what Bishop Miege does with their, if their offense will change a little bit in terms of getting those quarterbacks that are a little bit shorter, if they get them outside of the pocket, if they do a little bit more rollout and things like that. But Jafar Armstrong, the junior, is one of the best wide receivers in the state of Kansas, also a potential D1 guy. Diminutive, his little partner in one of our dynamic duos, Danny Murphy, just one of the smallest little guys that's playing in all of Kansas, is a great route runner and a great complimentary wide receiver for them. They're going to score points. They've got key pieces back on defense as well. Kalen Key, defensive lineman, is going to be one of the best players in the state of Kansas. You know, last year, I think it could be argued that Bishop Miege was potentially the best team in the state of Kansas all classes. I mean, you know, they play in the very tough Eastern Kansas League, and they beat some of the best 5A and 6A competition that was offered to them last year, and then they were dominant. Although, speaking of Aiden, deserves a lot of credit for battling in that state championship game. But
great
I think
game.
If you looked at the Yes, a tremendous game, and a game where talent wise, Topeka Hayden was probably outmatched because Bishop is just absolutely amazing at every position, and they should be the favorite again in 4A1 this year. But it will be interesting to see how that quarterback competition shakes out and what it does, how it affects their offensive production early in the season.
And one player that I think had featured in the magazine, and I heard you hear more and more about him every year, is Ian Rudzik from Ulysses. Just a freak athlete, just a great kid. He, you know, 100-meter dash qualifier in state, 400 relay, discus thrower, shot putter, and just, well, by the way, he's a great football player. just what about this kid that people might not know about and the presence that he has on the football field that will help Ulysses make a run at a state title?
Well, I a lot of people maybe know this, but he does have a University of Wyoming offer, so he's got at least one D1 offer on the table. 6'2", 220-pound, big frame guy. He really runs surprisingly well for his size, and he and his dad, who's an assistant coach there at Ulysses, they're kind of trying to turn him into more of a linebacker. I mean, he's always been a linebacker, but everybody knows of him because he's rushed for at least 1,200 yards in every season of high school, and he's started since he was a freshman. They're telling him that the coaches that are looking at giving him a chance to play at that Division I level are telling him, you know, that his spot is probably going to be linebacker. So they're looking to make him stand out a little bit more on that side of the football. And, you know, they have some other key pieces back at Ulysses, and they have given Bueller outstanding games in the first round of the playoffs here the last few seasons. I mean, I think last year they lost to Bueller 14-7, or I know some in the last couple of years the games have been 10 points or less, and so they're very close to being right there with those elite teams in that 4A, but they end up getting a really tough first-round matchup, and if things shake out the way that it has, it'll probably be that Bueller team again, and Bueller is outstanding with Jace Williams at quarterback. Jace Williams reminds me of Marcus Watts from Hayes that went on to play safety at K-State. He's very tall and long and lanky, and he is a tremendous defensive back, not to mention how talented of a quarterback he is. And they also have Dylan England back in the backfield, and Jaden Abernathy, a big offensive lineman that started for them since they were a sophomore. And they, you know, when he was a sophomore, they won that 4A state championship, and then they lost a bunch of pieces on that offensive line. But Steve Warner's done such a good job with that Bueller program. It would be interesting to see if we see a rematch of Bueller and Ulysses in that first round, if Ulysses can kind of get over the hump that Bueller's created for them a little bit.
And we talk about so many familiar names in 4A Division I that are going to challenge for that top spot. And last year in 4A Division II, we saw some teams kind of say, hey, kind of emerge. And like what you said earlier, put it in the magazine, one of the greatest stories last year was Santa Fe Trail and kind of the emergence they had last year. But also the team that defeated them, Columbus, was a good story as well there in 4A Division II.
Yeah, Santa Fe Trail, Jason Duncan, I mean, they had struggled. Their struggles were really noteworthy. They had really had a hard time getting wins, scoring points, doing those kind of things. And then to turn around last year and make that deep playoff run and go 9-3. And they've got some pieces back. And they've lost some key components of their offense and Derek Cashier and some very talented skill position players. But they've got a couple of brothers up front, Hastings, Jake, and I think Cody Hastings, dynamic duo there that were part of our weight room photo shoot. So I think they've still got some pieces up front to help them kind of recreate what they did last year, and that was one of the greatest turnaround stories that we've seen in the last decade. But Columbus, Jace McDown, who also happened to be part of our weight room shoot for that classification, he's one of the best running back linebacker combinations in the state. He's a brick. I mean, he is very strong. I saw him lifting at the 4A powerlifting competition, and you know he benched in the 300 range and cleans in the 300 range and squats in the 480 500 pound range, and he's also got good feet. He's a kid that I think would really like to play Division I football, but I think some of the coaches are looking down on him a little bit because he's right at 6 foot. You know, he might even be like 5'11" and 7'8", that sometimes that height causes a problem. He would make a great fullback at the next level, but you know the modern college football offense doesn't really use a fullback that much anymore. So inside linebacker might be his role at the next level. And I think Columbus is a team that has an opportunity to go make another deep run in the playoffs. But Ann Dale is probably going to be the class of the classification. We have Holcomb ranked number one in the offseason, the preseason. And the reason that I did that, or that myself and the group of people that I consult with, the reason that we did that is because Holcomb has so much talent back at the skill positions. Trey Teeter, who's playing his last year high school football for his dad, Kent, is a great quarterback that started all 4 years of high school, and you have to imagine that he's gained so much knowledge about checking down and reading and making good decisions about throwing the ball, and his numbers reflected that last year. And he has most of his wide receivers back that are very tall and very talented. The loss of Blake Rickmeyer is going to be tough for them at the linebacker position on defense, but on offense they should be really outstanding. The reason that I would say that Andale is a hair less than Holcomb, if at all, Anthony Cappell is not going to play football this fall. He sustained an injury in the state championship game, and I'm not sure that if it's going to keep him out of wrestling or not, but he really is a great wrestler, and wrestling is something he's very passionate about, and I think he's concerned a little bit about that injury and whether, you know, how that plays out over the football portion, and he's still kind of nurturing and healing that. He was a great fullback for them and a beast of a defensive lineman. Probably the most physical player that I saw on film last year. And I think that's somebody that they're going to have to find a replacement for him, certainly for them to be anywhere nearly as dominant as they were last year. I mean, they still got great pieces in Jeff Austin, Mark Hageman, and some other pieces along the offensive and defensive line, but they've pretty much been wiped out in the skill positions. Now, they have 97 guys out for football at 4-H-2 and L, so they're going to have great tradition. They're going to fill all those places in. They're most likely going to be the best team in their district. They're most likely going to have an opportunity to go deep in the playoffs. I just think that Cappell potentially could be a big loss for them that they're going to have to replace. I think they're going to have some really tough early season games. Collegiate's going to be very good. Bueller's going to be very good. So it'll be interesting to see how they come through that first four-game stretch. But that's, you know, that's non-district game, so that's not anything that, you know, if they lose a couple in some outstanding hard-fought games, it's not anything that's going to keep them out of the playoffs. But it'll be those are going to be some of the best games that we see in the early season, Wichita Collegiate and Andale and Bueller and Andale. Those will be ones you want to circle on your calendar.
Well, the early season surely shapes your destiny for the schedule or the outcome of the season, that's for sure, as we see so many teams get in the playoffs that can make a deep run if they've played good competition earlier in the year. And you mentioned rankings earlier in there and 4A Division II. And if we talk about preseason rankings when it comes to Class 5A, you know, Bishop Carroll, undefeated state champs last year, they lose quite a bit, 34. I think I saw 34 seniors graduating from that squad. So if we look at the preseason rankings and the Kansas Pregame Magazine, we see you have the runner-up from last year, St. Thomas Aquinas, getting in there at the one spot and Bishop Carroll below them. So what are you seeing from Aquinas coming back this year that can make another run for the championship?
Well, Aquinas was a tremendously experienced team coming in. We knew that, but they also ended up having a couple kids transfer in, a couple of players from Shawnee Mission Northwest and a kid from Hutch that really have bolstered a team that was already absolutely loaded. And then, of course, Randy Dreiling. I think we all anticipated that Aquinas was going to be better and that they were going to be good. They were going to be a playoff team. They were going to be a team that maybe won a game or two in the playoffs. I think for me personally, I probably underestimated Randy Dreiling. I didn't anticipate him taking them all the way to the title game, and really for a half giving this amazingly dominant Bishop Carroll team everything that they could handle. And I think it's going to be a battle-tested team. It's going to be a deep team. It's going to be an experienced team. And Randy's got his son Grant, you know, helping run the offense there on that coaching staff. And I just think that we saw such a rapid ascent from them in year one. And we know what Randy Dreiling did at Hutch High. And then when you pick up a few kids that are really good players, not to mention all the guys that you have coming back, you're going to have the opportunity to do something really special. And then, you know, you look at the rest of 5A, Bishop Carroll's still going to be a factor. The Dugan kid on the defensive line and Will Honus at the linebacker and Noah Johnson on the offensive line, who's one of the best offensive linemen in the state, and he's getting a lot of 1AA type offers, a lot of D2 offers, and there's going to be some smaller D1 schools that are going to be coming after him. And they have those key pieces back on offense, and then they have this great junior varsity program, they have this great freshman program, and then Coach Shuckman, who said, you know, he's been there for 20 years, and he said, we blew out a lot of people last year, and a lot of these young kids get to play. Got to play last year in these blowouts, so they're going to be experienced and have had varsity playing time and have had quarters of varsity playing. I think that they're still going to be a factor. And I think Salinas South and Blue Valley West and Mill Valley, who's done a great Joel Appleby's done a great job that getting to that program 6 years ago after leaving as an assistant to Brandon Clark at Derby. They've got some key pieces, Logan Cook and Christian Jagan, our quarterback wide receiver combo that are two of the best in the state of Kansas, big offensive line, and they have a brutal early season schedule that includes Aquinas and Blue Valley Northwest and Staley, Missouri. So they might struggle through their early season schedule, but I think they have an opportunity to make a return trip to the playoffs and maybe get a couple victories, maybe be a threat.
Well, folks, I think that's as most extensive coverage you're going to get right there from the Kansas Pregame Magazine. John Betts joining us to preview the magazine, but also preview the season. Just a lot of information from all over the state. I encourage you to get out there and take a look at this magazine for your own knowledge and get to know the teams, who's going to have the interesting stories, who's going to have the feature players and the kids to watch out for. John, I can't thank you enough to stop taking time to talk with us. Remind us where they can pick this up or view the magazine.
Well, your best bet's to go to kpreps.com, our web partner. Those guys do an amazing job with high school football. They're going to be, in the fall, they're going to be the first place that's going to have the most scores online. Make sure and follow them, their social media. They're going to do a great job updating some things there. They do a great job with playoffs and playoff brackets, and then there's new features every day on there. And if you go to kpreps.com, you click on the magazine link, you're going to see Kansas Pregame at the top, and there'll be a link to the digital edition, and then there'll be a link to the list of all the locations that you can find a copy. I am really thankful that you give us the opportunity to come on and talk a little bit about high school football. And you mentioned pick it up for your knowledge and get ready for the season. Something that we hear a lot is that people take it with them in their van or their pickup or wherever they're going, and they're getting ready for a game, and they open up and they look at the team that their son plays, you know, that's going to be playing this week, or that, you know, if they're a fan around town, they look and see what's going on. The other thing is, I hear coaches all the time telling me that they use it for their early season scouting reports. And I actually have coaches that call me and say, hey, there's not any information here about what this guy's running for offense or defense. Did he not give you a heads up? And here, the thing that you're going to find is, any first-year coach, they won't tell me anything about what they're going to do offensively or defensively, because they think, you know, it'll give them just a little bit of an edge that through those first two or three games, somebody will have to work a little bit harder to figure out what they're going to use for scheme-wise. But then the second year, they always give it to me because they know it's out there and people can find it. So,
the Kansas Pregame Magazine was the Huddle before Huddle came around there for the video software. So.
Yeah.
Well, good stuff as always, John. November will be here before we know it, and we'll have to stop by and maybe talk some wrestling when that gets going. So thanks for joining us, and we'll look forward to the football season to come.
Sounds good. I really appreciate it.
That'll do it for another episode of the KSHSAA podcast. Join us next time as we preview Vipe magazine with Harold Bouchard and talk a little more football and also get some volleyball preview for the upcoming season.